Welcome to Explore Europe, a podcast series for American military stationed in and around Germany. Each episode brings you travel tips and local secrets to help you get the most out of your time overseas. With your hosts, Michelle Peirce and John Sweeney, who have been living in Germany and exploring Europe for over 15 years. So, where should we explore today? Well, there's only one way to find out. It's on with the show.
Thank you so much for coming on to Explore Europe. I'm so excited to have you here as a guest.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm excited to talk to you today.
Perhaps we can start by you telling us what a fellow British expat is doing in a lovely city like Copenhagen in Denmark.
Well, we've lived here about 10 years now. We did have a bit of time between that in Germany, but we just love Copenhagen so much. And my husband and I just got married when we moved here, and he was working for Nokia. And they were always saying to him, oh, do you want to try one of our other offices? And I used to be a bit, no, my career, that kind of thing. And suddenly I woke up one morning and I thought, what the hell, let's just do it. So we said we'd do it for 3 years, see how we got on. And we moved here in March 2008. And I think it was a glorious spring going straight into summer. And I think it was probably about May time. And we were sitting in our apartment, birds singing outside, eating our dinner. And I said to him, I love it here. I don't want to go back to England. He said, oh, no, neither do I. So we stuck it, you know, we stayed here. We had our son the year after. And we just love it. It's a really relaxed city. That's what I like about it. We don't have a car. We use public transport. We cycle everywhere. And because it's a coastal town, it feels like a village. It feels very seasidey a lot of the time. And you're in constant awareness that you're surrounded by water. And I think that makes people feel quite chilled out and relaxed. And yeah, we just love it, really.
Well, you've sold it to me for sure. And I have to say that Copenhagen is probably one of my favourite European cities outside of Germany. So I'm really excited that you're here. But let me just come back to one point. You said you moved there in the summer. And I think that's really brave that you just took a huge decision to move to another country. And a lot of our listeners, you know, our military families, and they don't really have a choice to do that. But one of the things I noticed after I moved to Germany, I moved here in the January, so my adjustment period was kind of through winter, and I kind of allowed myself that year to adjust. But being here in a winter or an autumn, I think when you're away from home in a new country, it can feel a bit different. How did you find your first winter autumn in Denmark? Because some of our listeners may not know, but the lighting can be a bit difficult and a bit challenging for many people.
Yeah. I think when the winter came, it was still the honeymoon period, I guess.
Okay.
So I was learning Danish. I'm still very excited about it. And I have to say that Denmark and Copenhagen do Christmas amazingly well. You know, it's sparkle. You've heard about hygge and the coziness and everything here. That's when you're like, peak hygge is Christmas time.
Okay, let me just stop you there, Melanie. Let's go back and explain what hygge is to some of our listeners. I've heard of this because I started to embrace this a couple of years ago when I was struggling a bit with some winters in Germany. So just tell us about hygge.
Okay, well, the Danes would say that it's a unique word, you can't describe it, but it basically means being cozy with people that you enjoy spending time with in a very kind of non-confrontational way. So you're not talking about politics, you're just sitting. So an example, I mean, you can hygge in the summer as well as the winter, but a winter example is, you know, you'd be cozy at home, you've got your wood fire burning, you've got some friends around, you're either eating cake and drinking coffee or maybe a glass of wine, and there's some sweets, and you're just together. And it's that feeling of warmth. And of course, candles are a big part of that. I think the Danes are the biggest consumer of candles in the world.
Goodness.
They light them at breakfast, lunch, dinner. You go to a business meeting, they're on the table, they're in cafes. They're even in, you know, like daycare, nursery, kindergarten places. The kids will be lighting the candles when it's lunchtime. And it's that feeling of light and warmth. But in the summer, if you're going to be hygge or hygge, you'd sit down on the harbour wall with your friends, a six pack of cold beers from the 7-Eleven, and watch the sunset. And just, it's just being together. And I kind of see it as quite an old-fashioned way. It's kind of how I grew up, you know, like family around you, mm-hmm. and it's just cozy and nice. And that's what being, you know, a hygge is all about. But the winter, like I say, up till Christmas, it's lovely. The days are getting shorter, but you've got the Christmas lights, the Christmas markets, ice rinks are set up, everybody's, you know, people are still outside.
Yeah.
Come to January, it is not as nice because... Sparkle's gone and you're sitting there, you're thinking, we've got another 3 months of this.
Yes, and I feel like that in Germany often sometimes.
Yeah. Some Februarys, you know, you get maybe less than 24 hours of direct sunlight in the entire month. So how we cope, we light our candles. Daylight lights are really good to have, to wake up to and to have in the house. And, you know, going to the sauna. The sauna I go to actually has a daylight room, so you lie on like a lounger and it's got all these special UV daylight lights around you, and you get your kind of boost of vitamin D and serotonin. So but it is quite tough in the winter, but up till Christmas it's beautiful. But I would recommend, if you're coming to visit Copenhagen in the winter, avoid probably, you know, February to March. I mean, in the February holidays, everybody just disappears. They go to Morocco, they go to Tenerife.
They seek the sunlight. Well, it sounds like you've got a great system for surviving all of the seasons in Denmark. And there's obviously a reason why Denmark has been voted one of the happiest places to live in the world consistently in polls over the last few years. So they very clearly have these systems for managing the winter blues and embracing the best of all of the seasons. So it really sounds like you've embraced all of that. Fantastic. So you're living there and you're a resident. So today I'm going to pick your brains and share with our listeners so they can really experience Copenhagen like a local. Perhaps you can start by just giving us a quick overview of Copenhagen, maybe?
Okay, it's a very small city. We only have 1.3 million people that live in Copenhagen, and that's in the whole, like, the urban area, not just in the city centre. So it's going a bit further out. There's only, like, 800,000 people in the city itself, in the centre of it. So it's really tiny. It's really walkable, or using public transport. If you come here and you're staying in a hotel, a lot of hotels will offer you a bike that you can borrow during the time that you're there. The only thing I would call to people, if you're not familiar with doing a lot of cycling, you know, gen up on the rules of how to cycle here. but we have separate cycleways alongside the main, like you've got the main road, then you have a sort of little bit of a curb, then you've got the dedicated cycle bit and then the pavement. So it's really safe to cycle. So as a city, very small, very walkable. We're right on the coast. We have an inner harbour, which some people refer to as a river. It is not a river. It is the inner harbour. and that's a beautiful place to hang out in the summer. There's swimming baths that are actually in the harbour water. It's so clean. Wow. You can swim in the harbour. And we've got lots of neighbourhoods. One thing I would say, if you've been travelling around Europe, you know, you go to Berlin, you've got the Brandenburg Gate, you go to France, Paris, you've got the Eiffel Tower. We don't have a thing like that here. We have the Little Mermaid, and she is quite little, but I would say go and see her anyway. But we don't have that big sight to see. So it's a lovely city to just relax and walk around, go into the old part of the city and see the old buildings there. It's a very flat city, but there are lots of places you can go up high and see over. And there's actually one church in Christianhavn, which is the opposite side of the harbour to the main part of the city, where you can walk up the spiral on the outside.
Oh, excellent. So you get amazing views all the way up and all the way down. That could be a bit terrifying.
Yes, I have never been brave enough to do this myself. And every time I see like the little figures of people up there, I'm thinking, how can they possibly do this? But it's supposed to be an amazing experience. And I'll let you, I've forgotten the name of the church. I get it muddled with one of the other ones, but I'll let you know. You can put it in the notes. But that's definitely something I'd recommend, getting up high and looking over the city. If you're not that brave, you can go up to the top of the Parliament building in a lift.
Okay.
So you don't have to be that brave. But I would definitely say the way to explore Copenhagen is on foot.
Fantastic.
And get out into some of the neighbourhoods. We have the Vesterbro, which is used to be quite dodgy. It's the where the red light district is. Certainly cleaned up a lot in recent years and time I've been here. And it's quite hipsterish, but loads of nice cafes, individual shops. I know from listening to your podcast, you know, you talk about the nooks and crannies and places to go.
Yes, we do.
I would definitely say Vesterbro, Frederiksberg, Nørrebro. Those areas are the places where you go down the streets, you find little antique shops, you find little cool cafes and bars, and then you really feel like you're living like a local.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say coming here, you could probably dispense with the sights in the first day. Okay. We do have hop-on, hop-off buses.
Yay! Love a hop-on, hop-off bus.
Necessarily recommend them as the best way to see it. The better one is going on one of the harbour cruises or the canal boat cruises.
Okay.
And you see more of the sights from the water than you would from the bus.
Okay, that sounds like a great tip. I'm going to put that in the show notes for sure.
Yeah, you pick it up from Newhow, and there are two different ones. They run every hour, I think, and they're fairly inexpensive. And if you're traveling here, you can get a Copenhagen card, which gives you discounts and some freebies and also public transport around the city. So you can definitely get a discount on those. But they're about an hour, and they'll take you up to the Little Mermaid. They take you around the old canals that look a little bit like Amsterdam, and then up through the old town where you can see the Parliament Building, the Stock Exchange, some of the big churches. So that's a nice thing to do, and it's an hour, and if it's hot, it's cool on the water. But that gives you your bearings, and you can almost, to a certain extent, tick off some of the sights and say, okay, I've seen it, I photographed it, now let's wander, let's walk.
Brilliant. That sounds like a great tip, Melanie. And I love this kind of idea, like we say with our hop-on and hop-off buses, but we've also referred to some boats as well when we've been in places like Strasbourg. But to be able to orientate yourself first and then in a more relaxed way, then kind of plan a more detailed itinerary from that sounds great. And I love what you're saying about Copenhagen, because it doesn't have, you know, very specific sites. Okay, I'm going to put my hand up for the Little Mermaid because she is my favourite little site in Copenhagen. And I always wander out there. But it's a nice walk out to her. She's a little way out and you can take in some sites from there. But the fact that there's not a big list of things to tick off does mean that you can actually just absorb the atmosphere and the culture, doesn't it? Without this overwhelming need to race through an itinerary in a couple of days, which I guess is kind of mirrors the Danish laid-back culture anyway, doesn't it?
I would say so. I mean, it is a low city, it is a small city, and people are relaxed. So yeah, I would definitely say get that sort of out, not out of the way, but get that done, and you can say you've seen that, you've got an idea where things are. The other thing, which I found when I first moved here, you know, you look at a map, and although it has a scale on it, you don't necessarily realise how long or short distances are.
Yes.
But Copenhagen, you can easily walk it in a day. And of course, the other big thing that I would say people should go to is the Tivoli Gardens. Right in the centre. And we've recently had a whole new food hall built. Mm-hmm. And you can access the food hall from outside. You don't have to pay to go into Tivoli, but you can also get in from in the park, which is really nice because a lot of the restaurants inside Tivoli are quite expensive. They're around 25% more than you would expect to pay for a similar meal outside the park.
And wow, that's quite a difference.
Yeah, they've recently introduced a thing where you can't just pass in and out. Before, you used to be able to get your ticket, and if you wanted to go out and maybe, I don't know, have a McDonald's or have something cheaper outside and then come back in the park, they've now made it that you have to pay a small amount. It's 25 kroner to get like a pass out to be able to come back in, because I think they were losing people, so people weren't using the restaurants as much. But you've got a Wagamama's in there, you've got things that perhaps people are familiar with, but you've also got traditional restaurants. But that's just a beautiful thing. If you have kids, I would definitely recommend that you get the ride band, like a wristband, rather than paying per ride, because you start to really hemorrhage money if you're paying per ride.
So just explain to me a little bit more about Tivoli Gardens is what you've called it. Yeah? And I've never been inside, but I've walked past it several times when I've been into Copenhagen. And the reason I've never been inside it is because all three times I've been there, they've been closed to change their seasonal displays every time I go, which apparently are amazing. But just tell us a bit more about what there is to see and doing there, because it's quite a big draw in Copenhagen.
Yes, it is. And it's for everybody. Now, we'll start with families. If you go in with kids, one part of it, the furthest end from the entrance, are rides. And they're not dead. There are a few. There is a really tall one that you sit in like a basket and get spun around really high up and you can see Sweden.
That sounds horrific to me, but I'm sure there will be people listening to this that will love that kind of thrill.
They would love it, I'm sure. When the first time my mum ever visited this, she went, oh my goodness. And my dad thought something terrible. Like when they were in the car, he thought something terrible was happening. And she said, look at that ride. I can't believe people go on that. So you have a few, and it has the oldest wooden roller coaster in the world.
Okay.
And second oldest theme park in the world as well. And it was the inspiration for Walt Disney for his first park.
Wow.
So it's really old, it's really traditional. So you have that ride section, and then you have a garden section, which you just alluded to. Beautiful flowers. They actually have a farm outside the city where they grow the flowers and then they bring them in, so they're already grown.
Wow.
And in the summer season they start with in the spring around Easter with a bulb field of tulips and hyacinths and just all that kind of beautiful stuff, and then that gets replaced with early summer flowers, and then by the peak of the summer there's a rose garden with the most beautifully scented roses, so you can wander around. There's a really peaceful bit, so if you're not into the ride, don't go in that section. Yeah. You just stay in the peaceful bit. There's a lake in the middle of it. Wow. It's just, it's a little bit like, I'm sure your listeners are familiar with the TARDIS from Doctor Who. It's a little bit like that. If you look at it aerially, it doesn't look like a huge space, but when you get in there, it feels enormous.
Wow.
So you can wander around, and they do light shows later in the, when it does get dark in the summer, they do these light shows on the lake. And fireworks as well in the evenings late on. And it's just fabulous. And it's open from Easter to around September.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they call the summer season. And on a Friday night, they have something called Friday Rock. So they have some quite, sometimes big acts, sometimes just Danish acts every Friday. So the stage is in there as well. It's just everything there. And then they open again in the autumn, sort of around Halloween, and it's just, you know, it's full of pumpkins and it's a bit spooky, but it's really nice and cozy. And then the winter, which is just the run up to Christmas and then to New Year, and then they close again and then they open for the summer. So if you're traveling again, if you're traveling after Christmas, it's going to be closed.
So it sounds like, is it somewhere you could spend an entire day with your family?
Yeah, I think so. It opens around 11 in the morning, and I think you probably could. I mean, the rides, like I say, you get the ride band, then the kids can go on any rides they fancy without you having to think, oh, how much is that going to cost? You can also, as an adult, you can get an accompanying band. So you pay the same amount, but the child wears that. So they get two bands, their band and an accompanying adult band, which means any of the adults in your group can go on with that child.
Okay, great.
So if you like, if dad loves the daredevil rides and mum likes the gentle rides, you mix and match rather than just one of your parents getting their band and then having to say, no, I'm not going to go on that ride.
That's a great idea.
So it, I would say, yeah, with a family, you could easily spend a day there. It's not the cheapest thing to do in Copenhagen, but I would definitely recommend at least going in and having a walk around, having a beer or a coffee and cake if you're child, you know, child-free, and with the kids doing some of the rides.
Fantastic. And you mentioned the restaurants in there and perhaps coming out to eat outside. Can you take your own picnic in there, or is that forbidden?
Yeah. Yeah, no, you can.
So that would be another way of kind of making it a slightly less expensive day out if you're a bit worried about spending, you know, too much in restaurants and things like that.
They have an area there called the Plænen, like the lawn, and it has old-fashioned deck chairs. You know, a lot of
lovely.
It's not kitsch in like a tacky way, but it's the kind of place that, I mean, I met this elderly lady, 80-odd old lady on the bus, and she was telling me about when she went to Tivoli when she was a little girl. And it didn't sound like it had changed an awful lot, which I thought was really, really sweet. So it's nice. And if you've got a little bit of extra budget, there's the Nim Hotel, which backs onto Tivoli. They have a terrace and you can enjoy champagne, cocktails and that kind of thing on their terrace, which is beautiful.
Well, that sounds like a great place for me to add onto the show notes. I'm sure that will be a popular choice. So what else do we have to do in Copenhagen, Melanie?
Well, if you were coming for just for 2 days, I would start with the canal cruise.
Okay.
Do that in the morning. And then, although it's a little bit of a tourist trap, I would then get off the boat and go to Nyhavn, which is probably the most photographed. That's your kind of money shot of Copenhagen, the beautiful coloured houses along there. All the way along are restaurants, and you can get a traditional open sandwich.
And what do we call that in Danish?
A small ball. There's probably Danes listening going, oh no, terrible pronunciation.
That's okay. We won't invite them to correct us. You should hear me murder the German language on some of my other podcasts. Don't worry about it. So just say that again. Let me see if I can get it.
Smorbel. It means it's sort of spread bread is the literal translation.
Okay.
And they are very particular. There are rules about how you build up your open sandwich. So you will, wherever you go, you will see the same ones on offer.
Okay.
If you're a vegetarian, they do an amazing potato one that's got kind of sliced new potatoes, some creme fraiche type cream, onions, chives, that kind of thing. And the most popular one is called a shooting star. And that is a piece of bread, like rye bread, so the dark brown bread, breaded place, mayonnaise, prawns and asparagus and a little bit of caviar on the top. Now that's my favorite one, and that, you know, you have that for your lunch, that sets you up for the day. And then I would just walk up from Newhown and walk through along, we have the longest walking street in Europe, so walk along the walking street, but come off of it, explore the little side ones, and then you will end up at Tivoli at the end of that. So pop into Tivoli. So that's kind of like your first day. That's the what I would call like the touristy day.
Yeah.
And you were right, you could walk around the harbour and you can see the Little Mermaid, and that's a lovely walk. It goes past the royal palaces, you can see the opera house, so that's nice to do there. But on the second day, I would pick a neighbourhood.
Okay.
Maybe like Vesterbro or and Frederiksberg, which is next to it, and just have a little walk around the streets and look at the little shops and stop for coffees, beers, lunch along there. But kind of you get a feeling of the city. And we have some lakes in the middle of the city as well, which used to be the reservoir for drinking water. And walking around those is lovely. Pick up a Danish pastry. I would just sort of say wander. Get hold of I know everybody has their maps on their smartphones and they're brilliant, but I don't think they give you that kind of overview of the city. So you can pick up these free tourist maps from anywhere and just open them up and just have a look and pick an area and just wander and walk around and get a feel of the city. It's a super safe city. So you don't really have to worry about, you were not going to stumble on a dodgy area.
Okay, great. That's good to know as a tourist.
Yeah, just have a wander around and then maybe take the metro down to one of the beaches, or just head out to one of the beach areas and have a swim in the sea. You know, if you can, if it's hot, and do that. That's a fantastic experience to tell people you swam in the sea in Scandinavia.
That sounds amazing.
But just wander. That's always my advice to people. Just wander and look and see and you know, look in the interior design is famous here. You know, there's lots of little tiny shops that you can go in and you can get wonderfully tasteful, beautiful things, gifts for people. So that would be my recommendation.
I have to say that brings me on to a great point. My overall impression of everything Danish is that it's tasteful.
Yes.
Everything is so very stylish, and this Scandinavian style is so very popular all over the world at the moment, but it really does emulate from the heart of Scandinavia, from Denmark, doesn't it? It's just, everything's just beautiful, natural materials, minimalist style, just really, I really, really embrace it and I love that. So being around that is something very nice. And something that I found in the coffee shops over there, and I think I've heard you talk about this before in other podcasts, the kind of the cafe culture in Copenhagen is really strong and something that if you're visiting, you should really embrace, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We've got a lot of what I would term hipster cafes, which are a nice experience to have. But there's also, particularly in the city centre, there's a handful of what are considered like the original coffee shops from the 1970s.
Mm.
And there's one called Dan Terrell, which is really old fashioned and very French inspired. When they first opened coffee houses here, they were emulating the French. They wanted that Parisian feel of the coffee houses. So you can still find a lot that are like that. But then you'll also find, you know, these little ones that do sort of brunch plates and really interesting different food, and they're quite hipsterish. I have a friend who comes regularly with her teenage daughter, and we always go to this one called Mel og Kaffe, which means food and coffee. And you pick from the menu, you have either 3, 5, or 7 brunch items, and you choose what they are, and then it comes on like a wooden board and they're in little bowls on there. And it's just it's a nice experience for people who, you know, if you've got a fussy eater with you, or you've got a vegetarian, or you've got somebody who, if you look at the ready plated things, they're only going to maybe like 50% of it. But with this, sure. I mean, if you just like sausages, you could literally just have 5 bowls of sausages. And
oh, I know a few people that would definitely order that.
So, you know, that's that. The cafe culture is really, really nice, and it's very relaxed as well. So I would say that that's something, you know, just dip into any kind of cafe that looks interesting and have a coffee and, you know, like I say, have a Danish pastry, which you can get from the bakeries. A lot of the bakeries also have like tables and chairs that you can sit down on. So, you know, you don't have to be eating on the go.
Fantastic. And what about more substantial food options? Have you got any favourites or recommendations around the city for dinner or lunch meals?
Yeah, well, over recent years, I mean, when I first moved here, it was rather a desert for, you know, cuisine. But over, you know, with Noma opening, becoming the number one restaurant in the world, a lot of the Noma sort of, you know, the chefs that have worked there have now branched out and opened their own restaurants. Mm. And they're obviously a little bit more affordable than Noma. Now, that is an experience. If you want to do it when you come here, you are going to need to book well in advance.
Okay.
And possibly be disappointed because it's super popular. But there are two restaurants, and they're out in Nurebro, which is one of the sort of the neighborhoods outside the city center. There are two restaurants in the street there. The street's called Jägerbrugel, and one of them is called Relay, and the other one is called Manfred's.
Okay.
And they both serve family style food, so everybody orders the same menu and it comes and you all, you know, and they're chefs. Both yeah, they're both run by former Noma chefs.
Wow.
So that's somewhere to go. And Manfred's, if you're a vegetarian, I think is predominantly vegetarian on the menu there. I think when I went, one course was lamb.
Okay.
And one course was fish. But I think if you go in and say you're totally vegetarian, then you don't get those courses.
Sure.
And they also do wine matching menus with them. And the really interesting thing about Relay is if you're alcohol free, you don't drink alcohol, they do a juice menu that they match with the course.
Oh, now that's interesting, isn't it? What an interesting concept.
My husband went there. He doesn't drink a lot, and he didn't know about it. And his colleague had pre-ordered it for herself when they'd ordered the food. And he said, what a great idea. And they're, you know, they're sort of, they're appropriately sharp or whatever to do with the course that you're having. So there are two restaurants I loved Manfred's when I went there. I found it, and they also do organic wines, which are quite an experience. So that's something try. There's also a place called Grossbüßerie, which is another kind of family style type restaurant, but it's on the top of an old car auction house, and it's in a farm. It's a rooftop farm. They were inspired by Brooklyn Grange in New York. And they bought this or rented this space, and the reason why they can do it is because it's reinforced where it used to be the car auction house. The floor is reinforced because it was supposed to support cars. So they can actually put all of the farm, if you like, up there, all the soil. And they grow their own fruit and vegetables up there. They have another spot close to where I live on Amma where they also grow. But all that food is served in the restaurant there.
Wow, that's really farm to fork.
Yeah, exactly. It's a long table. And everybody sits at the long table and big bowls of food and plates of food are brought to the table. A lot of people go maybe not on their own, not knowing anybody. And you get to know everybody that's sitting at the table. You're kind of almost forced to make friends with people.
Yeah.
But that's another one that you have to book well in advance.
Okay. And are all these places quite expensive? I mean, I'm kind of well aware that I find Denmark quite pricey in comparison to Germany. So I guess that's something we need to manage our expectations on a little bit.
Absolutely. I mean, I lived in Berlin, and the price of eating out in Berlin versus the price of eating out here, you know, it would be considered astronomical in some instances here.
Right.
It is going to be a little, if you're coming from Germany, you are going to find it a bit more pricey.
Okay.
What I would recommend, which friends who've come from Germany, what they've done is they've picked one restaurant that they want to have like a blowout meal in at, you know, spend a good amount of money and have a really nice experience. And then the rest of the time they've gone for more casual dining. At the moment and during the summer months up to the autumn, we have a lot of street food places. With food trucks and different things in the harbour. That is a really good way to have quite an inexpensive but nice meal. And again, you know, I'm conscious perhaps, you know, when I have guests coming, they bring teenagers who are perhaps a bit fussy and don't want this, don't want that. If you go to one of these food truck places, everybody can have whatever they want.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
So that would be something to do, and you can watch the sunset from there as well. So that would be an inexpensive way. We went to Riefen on Friday, which is the kind of the street food market here. And I had a Gambian curry, and my son had an Indian tandoor grill. So two completely different things. And his was, obviously you'd have to do the conversion, but his was 100 kroner.
Okay.
And mine was 70 kroner. Now that's really quite inexpensive for food. And then you add sodas on top of that or beer, sure, or what have you. But that's a really, really nice way to have a nice experience in the evening, but not spend a huge amount of money.
Yeah, that's a great tip, actually. And I'm sure that there are also some local food trucks as well. So if you wanted to try some Danish food too, you can do that.
Yeah, they love barbecue here as well. There's a lot of barbecue trucks and such like. So that's a good way to have an inexpensive evening out. We also have a lot of pizza places. Gorm's is a really popular pizza place here. And there's one called Neighbourhood as well.
Okay.
They both do nice things. And I am also aware, again, with guests that come, you know, people aren't meat eaters and they have an idea that it's all pork here. You know, it's all going to be pork.
Meatballs from IKEA. That's what we all have in our minds. Yeah, come over from Sweden.
Yeah, it's not all meat. And there are two restaurants. One's in one of the neighbourhood areas, but one's right close to the city centre called Souls. And it's completely plant-based food in there, but really innovative food, really nice food. So that'd be somewhere I'd recommend for vegetarians. And going back to sort of if you're wandering around town and you want some lunch, we have it's partly open air and partly closed food market called Torhallen. And it's become there's quite a lot of the stands there sell cooked food for you to eat there. So you've got a French one that does this amazing kind of duck baguette, you've got fish and chips, but you've also got open sandwiches in there, pizza, and there's lots of tables outside. But because it's right in the centre of the city, you can grab yourself technically a picnic from there and then go to any one of the parks. Botanical gardens are right close to there, so you can just, you know, get that packed up and just walk and sit in a beautiful park and have, again, a really delicious lunch, but not pushing the boat out too much on the cost.
Well, Melanie, if you've listened to any of my other podcasts, you'll know that the food topic is one of my favourites. So I'm salivating after that little intro. Thank you very much for that. So we've covered where to eat. We've covered what to do. Let's just talk a little bit about where to stay and how to get there, because you're a resident, so you don't really need to book hotels, I guess. But do you have any tips from friends that have come to stay with you?
Yeah, definitely. I would say Airbnb is probably, if you're coming in a group, it's probably your best value to look at Airbnb. I had some friends come for my 40th and I don't have enough space in my house for them all to stay. So we rented a really lovely penthouse Airbnb in a very old apartment block right in the city centre looking over the King's Garden. So I would say that is the first place to look if you're coming in a group. A lot of people might look at staying at hotels around the back of the main station. It's a good place to stay. There's a decent selection of hotels there. But it's important to remember that it did used to be, and it still is, the red light district. So it may not be family friendly. And also, if you're going there to party, it's a great place to go because there's the meatpacking district, which is full of bars and clubs and restaurants. But if you want to go to sleep, you will hear a bit of boom, boom, boom from the club, even if you're slightly further away because the old buildings and one thing or another. So I would recommend that area, the Meatpacking District and Vesterbro, great to go out in the evening. But if you're coming with families or you're coming with people that like their sleep, maybe stay slightly further away from that area.
Okay, that's a great tip. Thanks, Melanie.
If you're coming as a couple and you don't want to stay at Nearmore Hotel Angleterre, which are the two like premier hotels, budget hotels, there's two chains that I would recommend. One's called the Cab Inn. I think they have three or four hotels in the city. And the basis of those is they're supposed to look like a cabin in a cruise ship.
Okay.
So you can either have bunk beds or you can have like a smallish double bed. And they're really small rooms, but they're super clean. They have really fast Wi-Fi. And you're looking at probably around 600 kroner a night. And that's for a couple in there. So that's quite cheap. And also the Wake Up Hotel, there are two of those. My friend who comes with her teenage daughter, they always stay in the Wake Up. Again, it's kind of, it looks a little bit like IKEA. So it's nice like that. But again, you have quite good budget rooms, but the higher up you go in the hotel, particularly the one that's in the harbour, the more you pay because you get a better view. But that's definitely one. And then if you're interested in hostel type stay, which I know a lot of people are, there's one called The Generator and also the Dan Hostel. With The Generator, you tend to, you know, you can go into sort of 6-4 person room. Don't know who you're going to be staying with, so it depends what kind of travellers you are. But I think with both of those, you can go for sort of smaller rooms for yourself. And if you're into camping, there's a lot of camping places. I don't imagine many people listening to this are going to come by car. But if you are into camping and you want to work your way up through Germany, through Jutland and then to Copenhagen, there are still plenty of opportunities for camping in and around the city.
Oh, that's good to know. That's good to know. Well, I think this time of year, a lot of people actually like to hit the road or maybe grab an RV, which is quite popular in Germany as well. And a lot of our American listeners will be quite used to that type of touring. And I think that's a great way to explore Europe while you're here. That's brilliant. So let's assume that we're not driving, though. There is an airport in the city of Copenhagen, isn't there?
There is. It's Copenhagen Airport. Although you might see when you go to book it, this is Kastrup, it's just known as Copenhagen Airport. Don't get too confused because the stop before it on the metro is actually called Kastrup. So I wouldn't want people to get off there and go, oh, where's the airport? it's right on the island of Amager, but it takes the metro stops literally in the airport. So once you've got your bag, you walk through the airport, go up an escalator and you're in the metro station.
Fantastic.
And it's 3 zones into the city and it takes around 20 minutes.
Brilliant. And you've got, actually, I was checking out your website today, which you can tell us some more about in a minute. You've got a fantastic YouTube video that explains how to buy a metro ticket, which I'm going to share in the show notes. And that's going to be an absolute lifesaver if when you're faced with one of these ticket machines, you are filled with fear. Melanie shows you exactly how to turn it into English, which zones you need to buy and which type of tickets. And that's a brilliant way to understand how to buy your tickets before you even arrive in the country.
One of the important things to remember is that the ticket you buy covers you for all public transport within those zones. So when you buy that ticket on the metro, when you arrive, it covers you for metro buses, harbour buses. We have buses like little boats that go around the harbour that are covered by it, and also suburban trains within the zone that you buy. So it's all integrated. It makes it great if you get in and you're on the metro, but then you want to get on the bus, or you see the harbour boat and think, oh, let's get that, this little yellow boat. So it's all covered with that. And yeah, I did do that video because I know a lot of people struggle with that.
Yeah, I think that's quite challenging when you first arrive in a new country. So Melanie, a lot of our listeners are going to be coming from south of Germany, some perhaps in the UK. What airlines fly into Copenhagen? Do you have any tips for that?
Yeah, if you're coming from the UK, EasyJet is probably the best one. They fly in from Luton and Gatwick, no longer Stansted. It used to be Stansted, but they closed their routes there. So it's Luton and Gatwick.
Okay.
But if you're coming from southern Germany, so Stuttgart, Frankfurt area, you're going to be looking at SAS or Lufthansa.
Okay.
For those. Now, I would recommend personally, I mean, it's about an hour and a half flight from both those cities, Copenhagen, but I would recommend SAS or SAS as we tend to call it, because they do 2 kind of budget ticket programs.
Okay.
Now they have a limited number of seats in those prices, but they do one that's called SAS Go Light, which you just take 8 kilos of hand luggage.
What do you need more for if you're walking around a city for 2 days?
Exactly. And that's super cheap. And then they do the next level up, which is called SAS Go, which you get the 8 kilo hand luggage and you also get a 23 kilo check-in bag.
Okay, great. So if you're in a family, if you're with a big family, everyone could take a small carry-on bag each and then pack the rest of it in one suitcase between you or something.
Yeah, that's what we do. When we fly to Germany from here, that's what we tend to do. And they're actually considerably cheaper than the regular prices on those SAS flights. So I would definitely, and I use SAS when I go to London and I do the SAS Go Light with just the one bag. But when I travel with my family, I have a son, we would tend to do, like you say, the SAS Go one and just take the 23 kilo case that way. And it's really, it's an inexpensive way of doing it. And it's a good, it's a nice airline to fly with.
Yeah, I've flown with them as well. They feel like a proper airline, don't they? Not a budget airline.
Yeah, they do indeed. But yeah, if you're coming from the UK, EasyJet is probably your best bet.
What about currency, Melanie? We've talked about, was it the krona that you mentioned before? Yeah, so would I need to buy krona before I arrive there? Is cash king in Denmark like it is in Germany?
No. No.
Yay!
It's not. I remember the first time going to Berlin and going in a bakery, and it came to around 12 euros. And she said, no card. And I'm like, what? Where's the cash machine? But no, here we're virtually a cash-free society. Danes themselves, we have something called a Dankort, but it's like a Visa card. Mm-hmm. You can use it just to buy chewing gum. You know, there is no... There is no minimum purchase. And a lot of people use like sort of apps on their phone to pay for things. We have one called Mobile Pay. So it's very, if you come and you've got a Visa card, you're okay. If you're going to try and use a credit card, like a MasterCard, there's often a charge on that.
Okay.
Because they prefer you use, obviously you won't have a Dankort, but they prefer people use a Dankort or they use a Visa card. But yes, you can't use euros here. I've seen tourists say, but this is Europe, why can't I use euros? You can't use euros here. I know in some European cities that have their own currencies, they still will take euros, but not here. Okay. So what I would recommend is that, yeah, you do use your Visa card, but get a little bit of cash.
Okay.
Just in case you're somewhere and for some reason, you know, they see it's a foreign card and they say, no, we don't want to take your foreign card. So have a little bit of cash in hand when you arrive. But yeah, the krona, we don't have the euro here. But yeah, get a little bit in your pocket, but try and use your card where you can.
Brilliant. That's music to my ears. And what about the language? I think I might know two words of Danish and they are all related to food. Can I get away with my Queen's English or American English whilst in Copenhagen?
Absolutely. Virtually everybody under the age of 45 speaks perfect English. And if you
how embarrassing.
Yes. If you say to them, oh, do you speak English? They'll look at you very disparagingly and go, of course. So, yeah, just don't even bother with the bit of can you speak English? Just start speaking English. Okay. Everybody speaks, and they do. They put us to shame, you know, their accents. Often I make a joke. A tourist stops me and I give them directions. They go, oh, your English is so good. And sometimes I go, yeah, all Danes speak like this. And then sometimes it's because I'm British. But yeah, you don't have to worry about the language at all. In restaurants, if you ask, they'll give you an English menu. But if you come in and you say, can I have a table for two? They'll probably automatically just give you an English menu. If you have any problems with it, they'll help you out. It's a big thing here as well. They introduce your food to you. So
lovely.
Once you've ordered, if it's kind of maybe a complex meal, there's lots of things on it, they'll talk you through what's on the plate as well, which is quite an interesting way of approaching things. But yeah, language, absolutely no problem at all if you're an English speaker.
Amazing. Well, it sounds like Copenhagen is a really gentle introduction to a new country outside of Germany if you've just arrived from the US. So, Melanie, you have given us so much value. I have so many exciting ideas and things to do in Copenhagen. And I know that you write about living in Copenhagen quite a lot. So if we wanted to find out a bit more about you and a little bit more about Copenhagen, where should I send our listeners?
Right, I write a blog called dailydays.com. It's kind of a Danish word, so probably you need to write it down for people. But yes. I've been writing that since 2013, and I share a lot of things that I enjoy here. I've become a little bit more, maybe not political on there, but I talk about some of the issues in Denmark and various things. I also write for the Huffington Post about Denmark here. But I've also got a YouTube channel, which you did mention earlier about the ticket one, but I'm definitely starting to populate that. So if people want to get a feel of Copenhagen, definitely head over to the YouTube channel if you're more into watching than reading, but you can find me there. And if you did happen to decide to come and live here, I also run a personal relocation service. I can definitely help people out with that. And also travel tips as well. I offer those via my website too.
Brilliant. Well, I will put all of those links in the show notes. And probably sounds like a great place for us to end, Melanie. Thank you so much. I think there are so many tips there, so much information to take in. But it sounds like Copenhagen is a place that you just don't need to overly plan before you arrive. You can just turn up and really embrace the culture and just soak up the atmosphere.
Absolutely, I would say that. I know people that come here and they've got a list of things. Maybe they've watched Borgen or they've watched things on telly. And they're like, oh, I want to see this, I want to see that. And they just get kind of, you know, they just wander and they find themselves going to some kind of relaxed state. And then you say to them, oh, did you get to Christiansborg and see the Parliament building? Oh, no, we found a street cafe and we just kind of sat there and what people watched. And we went to Illum's Bollyhus, which is like the mecca of interior things. And we just walked around and we just looked at beautiful things. And, you know, they kind of almost forgot their itinerary because they just got swept up into being relaxed and chilled out.
Wow. Well, it sounds like a great recipe for slow living and a super way to spend a relaxing weekend in a country outside of Germany. Melanie, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
The city of Copenhagen is the capital of Denmark and very much the beating heart of the country. It's a very advanced city in terms of infrastructure, architecture, sustainability, tourism and culture, which makes it such a joy to visit and get around. Copenhagen is one of my favourite cities in Europe, and as I grew up reading Hans Christian Andersen fairy tales, when I went there I had to make a pilgrimage to the Little Mermaid, of course. Hearing these insider tips from Melanie makes me want to go back again. So if you do visit, please do write in and tell us all about your trip. I've asked my good friend and sustainable living champion, Jen Gale, to share a sustainable travel tip. A small change we can all make to reduce our impact on the planet as we explore more of it. Take it away, Jen.
Thanks, Michelle. Hello, today's sustainable travel tip is all about wet wipes. I know they can make life so much easier and are handy for all manner of things, from actual baby's bums to cleaning up spills to giving yourself a quick freshen up when you're on the go. But still, no. Despite any claims to be flushable or biodegradable, the vast majority really aren't and will end up clogging up sewers and contaminating the local environment. Reusable wipes or good old face cloths are a great alternative. Check out cheekywipes.com for a really easy to use system when you're out and about.
If you'd like to get more sustainable tips from Jen, visit her website at www.asustainablelife.co.uk. It's packed full of resources and ideas for really simple steps we can all take to collectively make a big change. I believe the best travellers leave nothing behind but a good impression and take nothing away but great memories.
Thank you for listening to Explore Europe. If you've enjoyed this episode, please share it with your friends and leave us a review on iTunes. We'd love to hear from you, so tell us in the comment section where you'd like us to visit next. And let us know where you'll be exploring using the hashtag Explore Europe on Twitter. See you next time, explorers.